We'll call to order. Our first bill up is House File 2166, Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, where does this bill go? Oh, it looks like it goes to State Government Finance. Money appropriated.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I'll move House File 2166 be recommended to pass to State Government Finance. Thanks for coming. Please discuss your bill.
Thank you. Do you have the amendment?
There's an amendment there, too.
Oh, is there an amendment?
Delete everything amendment.
A delete amendment? Holy smokes. That means I got to open my stuff. You better tell us about the delete all amendment. What's the changes?
Mr. Chair, members.
And then we'll move the amendment, but let's get
this. This is Mr. Michael Puglisi, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs. He'll outline the changes for you.
Good afternoon,
welcome
Mr. Chairman.
To our committee.
Thank
How
you,
are you,
Chairman,
today?
Members. I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
As stated, my name is Michael Puglisi. I'm Deputy Commissioner for Veterans Affairs. This delete all amendment, what we're doing is we're adding a cleanup bill to the current bill that's before you. We were unable to get it in before the committee deadlines, so we're attaching it to this the transferring of state approving agency bill. And what it basically does is get rid of some old obsolete language out of some statutes that pertain to Veterans Affairs, one of those being the emergency medical program that we no longer administer as a result of recent budget cuts, and a few other areas pertaining to the cemetery, the appropriating of land, which we have done several years ago. So it's really just cleaning up some things that were just no longer being utilized.
Okay, I will move the DE1 amendment. Everybody understand what it is? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That amendment's now your bill is before us as amended. Representative Erdahl, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, 2166, is part of the governor's reorganization order, 190. It transfers oversight of education and training benefits for veterans from the Minnesota Department of Education to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The Department of Education, I believe, requested this transfer. Both the Departments of Education and Veterans Affairs support it.
All right. That seems pretty cut and dry. Any questions from the members? If not, anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against this bill? Hang on a second. Okay, I see nobody. Representative Solberg.
In looking at the delete all amendment, we look to page 4. The striking the language or other emergency medical needs. It seems like that's a large change in soldier's assistant agent. Can you tell me why you would want to strike out other emergency medical?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the reason we're striking that out is due to some of the budget cuts over the past years, we no longer administer that program. That was one of the areas that we cut. So now we're just following up with getting the language taken out of statute.
Well, Mr. Chair, not everybody's going to be in charge all the time around this place. And there may be an opportunity to support veterans sometime without having budget cuts. Even though you don't do the program, because there's no money, why would you take it out? For emergency medical needs? If a veteran comes in with emergency medical needs, you don't want to have to provide that program for
them? Mr. Puglisi?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we would love to be able to still administer that program, and hopefully sometime in the future, if we have funding available, we can recreate that program in a way. It was underutilized. That's one of the main reasons we did do away with it. There was too much red tape involved, and we were not really able to effectively help people with their emergency medical needs. So that was why we offered it up in the first place. Now we just want to get it taken out of statute altogether, and at some point, hopefully, we can put together a new emergency needs program.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg,
you have two things. You have the authority to do it, and then the financial resources to do it. You've eliminated the financial resources. They may come back sometime. But if you don't have the authority, then you have to face that coming back in the legislatures and getting the authority again. So I would move that we would reinstate the stricken language, and I guess I could do that if I just would remove Section 3 from the bill.
I will accept the amendment.
Okay. Representative Solberg is moving to remove Section 3 from the delete all amendment. Is that correct?
I think that restores the current language.
Mr. Chairman, Article 2.
Okay. All right. Everybody understands the amendment, and the author is okay with it. All in favor of the amendment? Oh, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Rhodes. Is there financial impact so that this will have to go to state government finance?
That's where it's going right now.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, there is no transfer of funds, so I may be wrong, but I don't believe it needs to go to finance. We're just transferring everything from the Department of Education over to the Department of Veterans Affairs.
I think it's going to Representative Haas.
Okay.
Indications are that there is, I guess he's communicated he'd like to see it, so. And you don't mind coming again anyway. You're here.
Not at all, sir.
All right. Anyway,
Mr. Chair?
We have on the amendment, we haven't moved past the amendment, but Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Rhodes. Well, I would like Mr. Puglisi to respond to the deletion then of Section 3, which reinserts the emergency medical, and how you will pay for that.
Puglisi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you're asking how we are going to administer the medical emergency program at this point. We will currently not be able to because we don't have the funding for it. Hopefully at a later date we can go back and ask for an increased appropriation and develop that program again, but right now we will not be able to. We have not for the past 2 years and will not be able to for any time into the future administer that program.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Puglisi, though, if it's reinstated because of the deletion of Section 3, it will be available.
I believe it's available right now anyway. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it's currently in statute that we can provide this program, but we don't have the funding to provide it. So I think what we were attempting to do was keep it on the books so that if at some point we did have funding, we could start providing it again without having to come back and get the authority to do so.
Okay, Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On the Solberg amendment.
I'm still on the same issue. What's included under emergency medical needs?
Mr.
Chair, Representative Samuelson, basically what we were doing with the emergency medical needs was paying for certain veterans who meet a certain income and asset limit. If they had some type of an emergency medical reason to go to the hospital and could not afford to pay their bills, we would step in and assist them with paying some of those bills.
Okay, thank you.
Boudreaux. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Samuelson, another?
Go ahead. Just one more quick comment. So then it really, like you say, was underutilized?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it was quite a bit underutilized. There was, in order to meet some of the requirements, was pretty stringent, and some of the bills that we could pay were pretty limited. So it wasn't utilized effectively. A lot of the County Veteran Service Officers, that's one of the areas we looked at cutting, and we discussed at length with the County Veteran Service Officers who use the program and are in touch with the veterans. They're the ones that suggested if we do make any cuts that be the first thing to go because it was underutilized.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Boudreaux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier. The question I have is, deleting this language, does it really, or even removing this section, does it eliminate options for veterans who are in this eligibility category? Is it duplicative from the current public assistance programs that we already offer for low income and low assets? I guess I'm wondering if this is just a technical change because certainly striking these words would not eliminate eligibility for the current public assisted programs. It's just that it sounds like we've had two different sources of funds for these programs. So could you tell me if we would be, by striking these or removing this section, some people would be denied some kind of benefit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boudreaux, It was, in some ways, duplicative. There are other benefits that are similar to what we were offering. This was a little different and unique to veterans. So this will not affect any other individuals that would be entitled to those other programs,
sure.
Only the program that we administered. So yes, there will be, you know, no veterans or no one will be entitled to the medical emergency assistance that we once provided. But it will not affect and should not affect anyone else that would be eligible for the other programs out there.
But Mr. Chairman, and to the witness, but what I'm asking then is, veterans who were eligible for these benefits, are they also eligible for our public assisted benefits?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bordeaux, yes, they are.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think I want a roll call on this.
Okay. Well, the author says he's okay with it.
I understand that, but I want a roll call.
Okay. Love to have one.
The other thing is that the medical assistance may require a spend down of assets, and my understanding that that's not necessarily the case with veterans. If you're a veteran and you have an emergency medical situation, even if I understand there's no funds, but in some future date we hope to have some funds for the veterans, but they don't have to be cut. But they would also then be not necessarily have to have a spend down to be able to have those services. Is that correct,
Mr. Chair? Representative, that is correct.
Okay, Representative, no?
Well,
yep.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I just want to say that, you know, I don't think this is a political issue. I think it's about trying to assure that benefits are there for people who need them. And I'm simply trying to clarify that the benefits are there for people who need them, regardless of this language or not.
Okay.
Obviously, there's no money for this fund, but no, I don't think it's I think it's just a technical question.
You know, I was thinking about if we left it in to put another sentence as money is available, but if we'll do the first thing to take it out and see how that flies.
Mr. Chairman, if there isn't any money available, they can't do the program. They can't spend money
right.
They don't have.
Well, that's
right.
Okay.
So what's the issue?
All right. Here we go. Any other discussion on the amendment? The author says it's okay, correct? Okay.
Yes. Rhodes.
Yep.
Lippman. Boudreaux.
Yes.
Ellison?
Pass.
I'm sorry, Ellison?
Pass.
Pass. Erickson?
Yes.
Haas?
Yes.
Hilty?
Hilty? Yes.
Jacobson?
Jacobson?
Johnson?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Knobloch?
Yes.
Lesch? Newman?
Yes.
Olson? Samuelson?
Yes.
Seifert?
Yes.
Solberg?
Yes.
Strand?
Yes.
Thiessen?
Yes.
Olson?
Yes.
All right. I think we have a total here. By God, there's the 15 for yeses and zero for nays. The amendment is adopted. All right, on the bill as amended, anybody else, anybody want to speak again from the audience? If not, Representative Haas, we're moving this bill to your committee, as I think you requested. So, House File, I'll renew my motion. House File 2166, as amended, be recommended to pass to State Government Finance. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. You passed. You're on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank
Good
you.
Luck with Representative Haas. Representative Zellers, House File 2308. Why is this here before us? Mr. Shepard, why is this bill before us on 2308?
Mr. Chair, members, the parts of the bill that relate to the committee are in Article 2, relating to the creation of a board. I believe it's on page 36 to 42.
Okay. And we have a technical amendment, the A4. Representative Zellers, it's pretty self what it says, They're deleting rulemaking in Chapter 14. Any questions on the amendment? I assume you want this to get the bill in order you want.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
I will move the amendment. Any questions on the amendment? The A4.
Oh, here.
Okay, seeing none on the A4 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, that is in place. Now we have the bill as you would like it. Do you want to go ahead and talk about just the section that's before us today, which would be the Offender Review Board, which is page, what was it, Mr.?
Mr. Chair, it begins on page 36, continuing through page 42.
You want to explain what you're doing here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. The Minnesota Sex Offender Review Board creates in statute a board to review the indeterminate sentencing portions of the second, third, and fourth degree criminal sexual conduct part of a sentence. Under this board, we would create the board, the membership, some of the rulemaking, and the amendment then puts that bill in order. Under the statutes, we're looking at not only the five-member board, but then some of the criteria that would be then formed later on by the Department of Corrections. And under Article 2, you'll see there are a number of different exceptions. We're following a lot of what's in current law for formation of the board, the private meeting statute, or the non-open meeting statutes. In a number of different instances, Mr. Chairman, there are right now there's no current method to review some of the sexual offender folks that we're releasing into the general public. This board would provide us yet another opportunity, and in some cases, an opportunity to review.
Representative Zellers, where does this bill go after it passes here?
Well, we're going to be going to the judiciary and then to civil law on Friday.
So you want this one to go to judiciary, finance, correct? So my motion should be to move House File 2308 to recommend to pass judiciary finance.
Yes, Mr.
Okay,
Chairman.
Now
thank
that motion's
you.
In order. All right. Now, we have Representative Kahn has an A3 amendment. Are you prepared?
You have that?
Yes. this amendment came because of a bill that Representative Lesch just introduced, which dealt with a bill that I had gotten passed, a law that I got passed maybe 5 years ago, I think almost unanimously, which had to do with and it is related to this because it is related to this section, even though it doesn't go into this section. Why it's related to this section of the bill is because it's probably the most important evidence that the review board may have to consider. And this was, and this only takes a part of Representative Lesch's bill, but it's the most important part, which is the preservation of evidence when DNA evidence exists in for post-conviction testing. What happened is that when I prepared this bill, which might have been about 5 or 6 years ago, we were about the second state in the country to require this. And it hasn't been used a lot when Susan Gartner went through her cases and decided to look at it. She can have three cases where it could be applicable. They did for one case, it turned out that they found out that the person who was being charged with the rape was not the person at all. Well, he didn't get let go because he was also in jail for a murder, which was not. But when she tried to look at the other two cases, the evidence had not been preserved. And this is more important now because last year, I guess we passed something that extended the statute of limitations for criminal sexual conduct. And that extension of the statute of limitations, which ties in with all the things that this board will be looking at, only applies if there's preservation of the evidence. So this is a simple addition.
Representative Zellers.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Kahn and I spoke before the meeting. Although I do not disagree with the bill itself or the amendment itself, I don't believe that this is the proper committee to add it on to the bill. Tomorrow in judiciary would probably be, in my opinion, the appropriate committee to add it on to. I did have a couple of questions, and maybe the learned chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, Representative Knobloch, could help with a couple of the questions, because there's on line 15, it says the court may impose appropriate sanctions on the responsible parties if they've destroyed evidence. And then as we go down to line 19 through 24 and onto the next page, it asks in there, or it stipulates in there the context of the sexual assault examination kit, blood, semen, hair, saliva, skin tissue, and other identifiable biological materials. I'm wondering if there's a fiscal note or a fiscal cost that we would add on to this, because this isn't in a normal, in looking at what the BCA would have under, kept in a cooler someplace, how this would maybe add on.
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Zellers, this would, to the extent this is not a financial bill right now, this certainly would convert it into being a financial bill, and this certainly would appear to have some cost or future fiscal effect, because I gather that not all the time this is being saved. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any need for the amendment, and so there would be some additional cost of saving it without speaking for or against the amendment.
Just for the record, Representative Lesh and Ellison and Johnson and Hilty, myself and Strand are all on the Judiciary Committee, so we're going to be hearing this bill. I don't think it's going to be tomorrow, though, because if it passes, it takes an extra day. But we could, and it's your bill, you could offer it in Judiciary if there's a fiscal input. But
there is, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, if I go back to the article 5 years ago, there's the evidence of doing the testing, which is much more than preserving the evidence. The cost of doing the testing when we ask the post is covered by one person released 1 year, covers all the projected costs that you could ever have because of the enormous cost of keeping someone in. You know, just think of the actual cost. But this is, first of all, most of this is not a cost to the state, because these people are not usually held, this evidence is not usually being preserved in the at the state level.
Representative Teason.
I was just curious, this bill has to have a fiscal impact without that, doesn't it? I just Representative Knobloch, I don't know if you're suggesting that you didn't know whether it did or not, but it almost has to. And I'm wondering if this goes to state government finance too, because of the costs associated with this board.
Interesting question, Representative Haas. I think it's judiciary would be the finance mechanism. I think.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it was more appropriate to judiciary finance.
Yeah. Okay.
Than that, because that's where the board would be created out of.
Okay. But Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg,
if there is a cost associated with the Kahn amendment, this is a good time to put it on, and then you can have a fiscal opportunity to have a fiscal note by the time it gets to judiciary finance. We'd know, including the cost that would be associated with local government costs, could be requested at that time.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Knobloch, you've got the authority to request that, I think, don't you?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, yes, and I'd be happy to request that. I guess usually when people bring forward an amendment, they have an idea whether it has a fiscal note or not. And I guess it seems to me clearly there's a fiscal cost here, what it would be. And if it's true that it would save money in the long run, now that could be true, but it's still a fiscal issue, and there's still some sort of fiscal cost here.
Mr. Chairman, I do not disagree with Representative Kahn's amendment. I just wanted to, before we will proceed forward with it, at least a day to check with, as she said, the folks that would be in charge of holding this data to make sure that it will not increase their bottom line, regardless of how it will increase any budgets here in the state. But if we're talking about county officials, county sheriffs, just to check with them in previously. And again, I can see the benefit to her amendment, because in the case of, and if this DNA has been kept, at some point in the future we may catch a rapist who, if we are able to look back at his DNA from several other, there's some similarity in the way the crime was committed, we can see a pattern, we can go back and test, he may then be convicted of yet another crime. So I do not see I do see the benefit, do not disagree with that. I just think that it would be the Judiciary Committee's purview on this, and it would also give us a day just to make sure and confirm who we're going to be affected.
Representative Ellis, you had a question?
I had a remark, Mr. Chair. Yeah. I just wanted to note that I think the Kahn Amendment is a very good idea, and I hope the members support it. The reason why is because we're looking now at the board and its responsibilities. And as I'm looking at page 39, subdivision 5, it lays out in paragraphs 1 through 7 on this sheet things that the board needs to consider when the board holds a hearing to consider whether an inmate shall be granted conditional release, one of those things, paragraph one, is the risk assessment as to whether or not the likelihood of reoffending. I imagine that's what they have in mind. And the question of guilt or innocence, or, I mean, it's got to be relevant to the risk that a person might pose. And having the evidence around the to examine it, and years after a person's initial incarceration, maybe toward the ends of their release, it'd be important to make sure that that stuff is preserved. Because as we know, you know, technology marches forward. You might have better testing techniques that might show that this person has other victims in their wake that they were not incarcerated for, or, which has happened plenty, maybe they didn't do it at all. And so I think it's important, in my view, right now, to make sure so that this board has the best evidence possible to make a decision regarding keeping, regarding whether somebody should be released or not. And I'm mindful of the remarks that Representative Knobloch is making. I know this will have some sort of fiscal impact, but this bill itself has a huge fiscal impact, and so I think that we should include it now, and we should hammer it out at the at the Judiciary Committee.
Well, yeah, we're not going to get into the fiscal of the whole bill, though. That's
I know that, but my point, Your Honor, I'm not Your Honor. Sorry, yeah. I don't want to give you a promotion. My point, Representative, is
I get
that
a salary for the promotion, brother?
You got it.
All right.
And you get as much money as you can get them to give you. But my point, though, Mr. Chair, is that we're talking about, in my opinion, and again, we don't have a fiscal note, so we don't know. We're talking about a fairly small portion compared to what this overall bill is going to cost. There may be some impact, but I seriously doubt whether it comes anywhere close to the total cost of what this bill is going to be. So I hope that members do support this, because it's part and parcel of what the board is going to have to rely on to do its work.
Representative Kahn.
The other reason is that just as easily, if you don't want it, take it off the judiciary as put it on. And the point is, it's brought before us. No one else except me thought it should be brought before us on this bill. And so I think it's a good idea to bring it out. Once it gets on the bill, it becomes public and everyone can look at it and we'll have it. And, you know, I'm not on any of the other committees later on, and we can take it off as fast as we put it off.
Okay. Representative Strahan.
Be brief, Mr. Chair. If the committee chooses to put it on, as Representative Kahn just mentioned, so be it. The local impact on this is tremendous. I mean, the average size of a police department is about 7 in this state. And for them to store evidence for 50 or 60 years is going to be incredibly onerous. And rules of evidence exist now in court. I mean, the rules of evidence exist now. DNA registration exists now. The court can order any of those things. So I think that it's a sort of a sweeping, you're going to keep everything in every one of these cases until that person is off probation, which will literally be 50, 60 years in some cases, is almost unworkable. So but we can figure that out in judiciary if that's what we'd rather do, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lipman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my view is that it's a jurisdictional question in either civil law or certainly judiciary policy and finance, and I think it would be overstepping our bounds. Because it was sent to this committee for a very limited purpose to have amendment practice on things which are in the jurisdiction of other committees.
Except I would have to tell you that Subdivision 5 talks about the board, and Representative Kahn is saying this relates to the board. But there are, as I point out, there are a number of us that are on Judiciary Committee. In fact, a pretty fair number of us. So either one way or the other way, we can get it worked out.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to vote on this. I'm not on the Judiciary Committee.
Well, you're going to get your chance. Representative Kahn's A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I don't think it makes it.
Division.
Division's been called. All for the Kahn amendment say aye. I mean, raise your hand. I'm sorry. Say aye with your hand. And against? Ten against. Okay, it does not go on. But I think the word is that when it gets to judiciary, you got your chance to vote, but I think there's some number of us will get the shot at doing this again. And Representative Strand, you may want to talk to him about the local impact as well, so we get that on. We're back on the bill. Anybody in the audience would like to speak for or against the bill? Representative Ellison.
Representative Zeller, as I recall hearing about your bill in the media, it was inspired by the events of involving Ms. Drew Shadeen. Is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, yes.
Can you share with me why that man simply was not civilly committed? I mean, this is an offender who has 3 violent sexual assaults, went to prison for 20 years, refused to have chemical or sexual offender treatment while in prison, and then was not civilly committed. Can you help understand? I mean, because if he was civilly committed, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
Representative
Zeller. Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, although I would like to be able to give you the magic answer of why or how that case got out, I really think that it is a community would be a terrible injustice for me to go back and try to explain what happened either in the case of the judge, the prosecutors. In some cases, and as an attorney yourself, you know that sometimes you can do your darndest in court, but you don't get exactly what you want, or you don't get exactly the penalty in some cases as a prosecutor that you would like. In this case, I can't. I can't explain to you why at some point along the line there wasn't a civil commitment process. I can't explain to you why, you know, during the trials that he didn't receive a longer sentence or a harsher sentence. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the county prosecutor that, you know, did, you know, go to the limited extent of the law that they possibly could. In this case, though, I apologize. My bill deals with future cases, and if we would have had this in place then, you know, his first offense, we would have kept him in forever.
Is there a fiscal note for this bill? I probably didn't see it as I thumbed through here. Is there one yet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, not yet. I have yet to receive a copy of it. Either
we will see it on probably, well, whenever after Thursday in Judiciary, if we're meeting, I assume we are, so I assume that's, you'll get your shot at that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zell, do they give you any sort of, well, I guess if you don't have a fiscal note, I don't want to invite you to speculate, but if you have any financial information about this, it might be useful because, you know, the civil commitment process at this point, I mean, at this point, what happens is the Department of Corrections refers people when they get close to the end of their sentence for civil commitment.
Right.
Well, now, not anymore. Now everybody is sent over. What we saw over time is a steady decrease in the number of people who referred for civil commitment. It seems to me that this procedure could be very, very expensive when all maybe we need to do is take a closer look at who needs to be civilly committed. Have you thought about, and what are some of your feelings about the question of, you know, just improving the civil commitment procedure rather than putting in life sentences and indeterminate sentences for offenders who, which could well have fairly significant financial impact, although, you know, we don't know exactly what it is. Why not just commit some of these people who have several prior sexual assaults and refuse to take treatment in prison?
Representative Zeller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, we have, when you look at the initial cost in the bill, you'll see in there it's $55 a day is what the current cost factor of one of the 5 board members. Now, without, even if, you know, the end of end of July, when this bill goes into law, we find somebody guilty, say, in September, October. Going forward, the first initial time the board will actually have to meet is within 2 years, because that's where in fourth degree where we're going to have someone within that 2 years time period. So to start off, the fiscal cost, at least for the board, which we're here to talk about today, will be, you know, minimal at best, because in the first 2 years they won't have to meet. There won't be anybody who will be reviewed under this process. Going forward, we may have to look, you know, 5, maybe 8 years out, whether or not, you know, under the old parole board system where it's a paid position or a full-time position, that these board members will have to be there, and is it more cost-effective for us to have a yearly salary rather than a $55 a day if they're meeting 7 days a week, you know, for 6 months in a straight shot. So maybe it's more cost effective. That's for another legislative body and another legislative committee group to look at in the future. For the civil, as far as the civil commitment process that we were talking about, under the civil commitment process, those folks go in at about a $314 a day bed rate into the state hospitals. Under this bill, they would go in under the normal incarceration rate in the prison at about an 80 to 81 as a ballpark number that we could talk about from DOC or from any of the, even the private facilities that under some of these folks would fall under. They could go into a minimum or medium security prison. So the cost savings from the civil commitment to the normal incarceration rate as we go out, and again, I agree with you, it would be awfully premature for me to speculate cost. However, when you're talking about that civil commitment rate, that's a very high dollar amount, whereas the daily incarceration rate is a lower dollar amount. And if we're catching them in their first offense, there's some research that I've have read in the Texas Board of Texas Council on Sexual Offender Treatment, the Management of Sex Offenders. The study came out last December, and I'll be happy to provide any committee members with that. Show that for of all these offenses that they are caught for, if we've caught them one time, there are probably at least 10 other times that they've committed an offense. Now, when we talk about costs and dollar amounts, that's very important. However, when we talk about victims, there are 9 other victims out there that are not going to see their rapist, their somebody who sexually assaulted them, not come to trial. So as we're going forward, I think that the civil commitment cost rate, and again, like you said, it'd probably be bad to speculate, but under that civil commitment dollar amount, we're going to be able to actually house more prisoners at a lower dollar amount going forward than we would at the civil commitment rate.
Just almost done, Mr. Chair. The only problem is that, I guess I got a couple of questions. One is, other states seem to be able to civilly commit people at a whole lot less than $314 a day. I'd be curious to know why it's so expensive in Minnesota. I think you could probably stay a week but at least a couple of nights at the Meridian for less. And so, I mean, I don't know why it costs us so much when other states do it quite a bit less. And I would commend you to take a look at what other states pay to civilly commit people, because it's not $314, which I agree is a lot of money. But under the bill, I mean, presently we're only civilly committing about 200 people. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But under the bill, we'd be having indeterminate sentences for second, third, fourth? Mm-hmm. Everybody except for fifth degree, right?
Correct.
And so we're talking about a whole lot more people than the number of people who are presently civilly committed. So you're right. We do have a lower per diem for Department of Corrections than civil commitment, but we're talking about a whole lot more people and perhaps for a lot longer. And I just would invite you to comment on this. I guess if I was on your board, I would not let anybody out, and here's why. If they get out and they do some horrible thing, then I'm going to get trashed in the press, and people are going to want to know why I'm letting sex offenders out. And politically, it just doesn't make any sense for any member of that board ever to vote for anyone to get out. Think about the political waves that happened as a result of the tragedy involving Ms. Shadeen. It seems to me that these indeterminate sentences are essentially life sentences or close to it. I'd invite you to comment on that if you care to.
Representative Zellers, and then I have Representative Thiessen. Did you have a question after that?
Let Representative Lesch go before me. Okay. I think you're responding.
You want to go ahead, Representative Zellers, and then go ahead.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison. I do, and I appreciate that, and I will check with some other states. Again, the research that I have been looking at is Tennessee and Texas were some of the studies that were cited there. I've been in contact with some of the research folks, so I will continue to look into that. And if there are, although I do think that our Department of Corrections, and I've been fortunate enough to sit on capital investment and look through some of the dollar amounts that they incarcerate at, and I've been very impressed with how our DOC does a pretty good job with the money they're given. As far as the indeterminate sentencing part, and I'll let Representative Lesch comment as well on this, in some cases, that's why on the board we will have a past judge. We have a member who is not a part of DOC or HHS as a board member, so that there won't be that natural inclination, as you suggest, to put somebody in jail forever, because God forbid what happens if they do get out. What the reason that that our bill goes forward with that is because at this time that's what's happening. Some of these folks, we're at least not having that one stop gap method that find, so that if we do see while they're in prison or while they're at some point during their criminal history, we see something that stands out with not only the board but also with some of the medical professionals, that we can't catch them now. With downward departures, there's some of these folks that are just getting out. There's no review for us at any point during the time in the situation.
Well, I mean, last question. They are subject to probation, though. I mean, their probation officer is monitoring them, and there is extended conditional release. I think 5 years after their sentence is over, they're subject to conditional release. Am I correct?
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, yes, Mr. Ellison.
Okay, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I wanted to have an opportunity to highlight what Representative Zellers, when he came to me with this bill, and I was working on a similar bill at the same time, was really important to me. The indeterminate sentencing part of this is really important, because the 5 years we have now, or the 10 years, is inadequate for being able to supervise these individuals. And Representative Zellers' bill states that, you know, these individuals, while we provide for lifetime sentences, does not necessarily mean they will be. There are still, the bill provides for presumptive sentences. So a member of this board, the Sex Offender Review Board, can consider this, and a person can be released if it's appropriate for them to be released, and the state would potentially save money in that circumstance too. You know, Representative Ellison knows as well as anyone that we cannot supervise someone unless we have that sentence hanging over their head. We found with sex offenders in the past 10 years that the amount of time we have them under supervision is just flat out inadequate, and it's all we can do to make sure we have, whether it's the bill that comes through on monitoring, whether it's making sure we know where they are every minute of the day. That's the most important thing to me in this bill. I think one thing that hasn't been covered by Representative Zellers also is that the cost on this, the fiscal note, is a ways out, because we are dealing with people who, for the most part, are already in a prison under the old statutes. So I wholeheartedly think this is a good effort. There may be some further tweaks, but I think that as far as Representative Ellison's question about why would anyone let any one of these individuals out, it's because we have it hanging over their head for the rest of their lives, or a judge has that option to have it hanging over their head for the rest of their lives. If a person comes before a court, a judge thinks it's inappropriate to have that amount of time, they can still sentence an individual to the presumptive sentence maximum, rather than going all the way out, mandatory life sentence. It's only the first degree for that one.
Okay, Representative Thiessen.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a question more closely. What's just the rationale for exempting this from rulemaking? Why are we doing that?
Sure.
Representative Zellers?
Mr. Chairman, members, when it comes to the formation, the rulemaking, under current statute, a lot of the, especially the Commissioner of Public Safety, a lot of the meetings that they hold and a lot of the rules that they make aren't subject already. So we're just following what's been in current statute, what's been used in the past. So that was a technical change. It probably should have been in there in the original draft of the bill. We're just following with what is current statute.
Okay, Representative Silver, got a question?
Mr. Chairman, this is probably a Judiciary Committee question, but in following the indeterminate sentences, did I hear them say that the judge had an option of not doing that and going to presumption sentence?
Representative Zellers or Lesh, I think, made the comment. Representative Lesh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, a judge, the only mandatory imprisonment is for the first degree of criminal sexual conduct. The remaining second, third, and fourth degree provides for a possible life sentence for an individual, so that we can supervise an individual for the rest of their life. But I think even more importantly, there's another provision in the bill which cleans up the old pattern sex offender law, which allows the court to extend out
an individual who's found guilty of having patterned sex offenders. It was the Apprendi decision, U.S. Supreme Court, which said that it was unconstitutional under Minnesota statute. So under second, third, and fourth degree and the new patterned sex offender law that we have in there, it's up to the judge, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll renew my... Oh, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just follow up on the thing about the rulemaking? So what you're saying is that the Department of Corrections doesn't have... Rulemaking doesn't apply to the Department of Corrections generally?
Representative Zoers.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, no. When drafting the bill, it was supposed to fall under that in the first place. The amendment keeps us with current law, consistent with current law.
Which amendment are we talking about? I guess so.
It was the initial amendment. I apologize, I don't have the number on it. It's to...
A4.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. To delete rulemaking in Chapter 14, and that's what we're following, the Chapter 14 rulemaking statute, that in some cases, that's what Department of Corrections, Department of Public Safety.
That's just more of a technical change.
Correct.
That amendment. I'm just asking why we're doing that in general. Why do you have subdivision 10 in there? Not why are we changing it from rulemaking to Chapter 14. I'm just asking. Why do we not have rulemaking for this board when we typically... I don't know the answer to that. I'm just asking that question.
Right. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Representative Thiessen, and again, this was following what was in current statute, and again, that it was necessary to make the bill so that in following what's in current statute with when used in other boards, in the formation of other boards, this is consistent with what's been used in the past or what is being currently used.
So, Mr. Chair, okay, so for other boards, they don't follow rulemaking? Is that...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, in other boards' cases, I'm not sure. This is something that was a technical change that needed to be made. This was following, and in the one case I can give an example is the public hearings. You know, in some of these cases, we're going to be talking about some very specific, you know, personal items in there, and the public rule meeting. That's the way that this statute was explained to me, especially when it comes to some of the rulemaking and some of those things, and some of the we're going to need to leave up to the Department of Corrections in the formation of the committee, the rules, the criteria.
And if I can just follow up, I understand the public meeting thing. I agree with that piece. That's I think appropriate. I don't know but when a board would make rules, there'd be a process that they'd have to go to. Publicly air, not a particular case, but just the rules they're going to apply. And I think it's particularly important here because whatever rules this board adopts, I would imagine, because of the indeterminate sentences, have to fall within some pretty clear constitutional parameters. So these aren't just life sentences, as Representative Ellison was saying. And so I was just, maybe is there someone else that may have a more specific answer on that, why this particular board, or am I just missing something here?
Representative Lesh, you have an answer for him? Or Representative Zoers?
Mr. Chair? Mr. Shepard? I can weigh in on that as listening to the debate on this. It seems to me that the rulemaking for the board itself, as the board is established and discusses its rules that it's going to follow, they would want to have public input into that under Chapter 14, I believe it is, which is a public comment type of thing. The meeting of the board after it has made its rules and dealing with sensitive material then is closed and should be closed. But it seems to me that this committee would be well served by having a public input into the rulemaking instead of having the rules adopted by the board without having any kind of public notification. So I don't know how we deal with that, other than we passed the amendment already.
Okay. Mr. Shepard, do you have a comment for us?
Mr. Chair and members, just to the extent that Representative Thiessen was asking about current law that might be analogous, this isn't exactly analogous, but there's a current rulemaking exemption for rules of the Commissioner of Corrections relating to placement and supervision of inmates. Supervised release term, internal management of institutions, and rules governing inmates of the institutions. So that's a current rulemaking exemption.
And if I can just follow, so this is just building on that notion because this is similar to that. That's
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, yes, I apologize. I think I used Commissioner of Public Safety and I should have used DOC.
Representative Ellison, you had a quick question?
Yeah, just a quick question. Mr. Chair, Representative Zeller or Lesh, the indeterminate sentencing for fourth, third, second, and first degree sex offenders, that would apply to first offenders as well as pattern sex offenders? It would apply to first offenders as well, right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, yes.
Okay. I think we're fully informed and ready to vote. I renew my motion. Was anybody in the audience who would like to speak for or against the bill? Seeing nobody?
Chairman,
Representative Kahn.
I think I'd like to try a reconsideration of that amendment. I can't that I did. I'd like to move to reconsider the vote by which the A3 amendment was not adopted.
All right.
Because I can't believe that I heard from people on this committee that they think that there's a price on innocence, on whether somebody should be sent to jail for possibly life, and that it doesn't deal with the and that we specifically pointed out where it was relevant to the board. And I not only want to move reconsideration, I want a roll call vote on moving reconsideration.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, is the reconsideration a debatable motion?
No.
Mr. Chairman, is there an opportunity to lay the amendment on the table?
I'm looking over for... I don't have my little note card. Hang on just a second. We may wind up... Does anybody...
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so, but we're not voting on the amendment itself, just the motion to reconsider. So if it's voted down, it's voted down.
Motion to consider is that's not debatable, the motion to reconsider the amendment. So let's see if there's going to be yes or no. So all in favor of the motion? On the motion to reconsider. I'm sorry. On the motion to reconsider the amendment. Okay, let's take the roll.
Rhodes.
Yeah.
Whitman.
No.
Boudreaux.
No.
Ellison?
Yes.
Erickson? Haas?
No.
Hilty?
Yes.
Jacobson?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Knobloch?
No.
Lesh?
Yes.
Newman?
Yes.
Olson? No. Samuelson?
No.
Seifert?
No.
Solberg?
Yes.
Strand?
No.
Thiessen?
We are having good times today. The motion prevails on a vote of 9-8.
And now I'd also like a roll call.
And a roll call on the amendment. Back on the amendment. Okay. We can discuss this now. Representative Zellers, what are your thoughts on the amendment again, just for clarification?
Again, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, members, I don't disagree again in concept. I just would like one more day. I would like to ask, as Representative Strand pointed out, some of the local officials that we're going to be asking to house not only the data, when we're talking about biologicals, when we're talking about tissue, there may be some sort of a refrigeration cost, a storage cost, and when it comes to rules of evidence and procedure, I don't know that we're not creating something on in addition to that as well. So, again, Mr. Chairman, members, I don't disagree with it in concept. I first and foremost believe that it would be the Judiciary Committee's purview, but also would be one more day to go over it to ask what the impact would be on the locals.
Okay. Roll calls. Yes, Representative Kahn.
Let me just point out, first of all, the DNA testing, there's no refrigeration. DNA is
You should say
stable
something.
Without.
She said no.
Stable. DNA is stable without refrigeration. And so then the next
then we got a procedural question.
Get her?
And so then the next issue that we have is the fact that you've got putting it on the bill means you can get a fiscal note.
Mr. Chair,
and you can take it off.
Okay. All right, Representative Haas.
Mr. Chair, I would like to know if Representative Olson was recorded as vote on there.
Representative Olson was not recorded on the vote.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then I would like to move we reconsider the vote. The motion again.
Okay, the motion
because
is to reconsider.
Representative Olson did vote, and she I did hear cast a vote, but it was not recorded.
And okay, the motion then is it's not debatable then, correct, I believe?
But
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, Representative Olson voted, I heard her, but it was not recorded as a vote there. So it changes the count. And she was here present during that time.
Therefore, the motion that you are making is to reconsider the vote of which this last
time
retake the vote.
As a roll
call. And this would be just to bring it for reconsideration. As a roll call, correct? Okay, call the roll.
Rhodes.
To sound up a little louder. Yes, sir.
Lippman.
No.
Boudreaux.
No.
Ellison.
Yes.
Erickson.
No.
Haas.
No.
Hilty.
Yes.
Jacobson.
No.
Johnson.
Yes.
Kahn.
Yes.
Knobloch.
No.
Lesch.
Yes.
Newman.
Yes.
Olson.
No.
Samuelson.
No.
Seifert.
No.
Solberg.
Yes.
Strahan.
No.
Thiessen.
We'll be real patient here. Get it right. If you're with your daughter, you know, you're going to have to start to raise your voice once in a while. Now it is a vote of 9 ayes and 10 nays, so that motion does not pass. On the bill, I renew my motion. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment. I looked at the statute on the rulemaking.
Yes.
The subdivision 10 again.
Representative Seifert, this is your rulemaking stuff.
And the things that are exempted from the rules right now relate to the placement and supervision of inmates serving supervised release terms, internal management of the prison, and other things like that. This is, I think, a very different. The rules that govern this board, I think, are very different because they are. It's more like a judicial determination than it is kind of the internal operations of, you know, where what prison someone's going to go to. And I don't know if there's someone from the Department of Corrections that might have a comment and could help me out with that. But I would move to. I think this should be subject to a public rulemaking process so that we get it. So we get it right and we get input from all sides into the rules that would govern this. So the motion would be on page 37, deleting lines 16 to 27, and then deleting Article 2, Subdivision 10.
Okay. Representative Sellers, what's your thoughts on this amendment as the author?
Mr. Chairman, we do have someone here from the Department of Corrections that if Mr. Thiessen, or excuse me, Representative Thiessen asked someone to speak to it as in particular. Again, this was a technical correction. In drafting this and in relying on the research staff, this is the way that they proposed it to us, not only to keep it in law or in current.
Can you reread your amendment?
Yeah, it's page 37. Lines 16 to 27, which is in this, is in subdivision 3, and then it's also eliminating subdivision 10, which is the thing that says this board is exempt from rulemaking and setting its rules up.
Okay, and everybody understand what the amendment is?
He's deleting current law as well.
Representative Lippman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, on page 37, you're deleting current law as well?
Oh, no. I'm just taking the amendment out.
The new language.
That's
okay.
My intent.
Okay.
By taking it out of the bill, we would be keeping the old the old language. I'm not, right. My motion not to delete old language.
The new language.
Change that language.
Again, Mr. Chairman, representatives, members of the committee, this was drafted to stay in line with current law and with using Chapter 14 in using what's available right now to the Department of Corrections. I don't want to, by accepting this amendment, then put this bill or this committee out of line with current law or current statute. So I would not, Mr. Chairman, not accept it. I would defer
to
the Department of Corrections representative.
Any comments?
My name is Harlan Nelson, Deputy Commissioner. I'm not sure what the technical
implications of that would be, and I would ask for some further study of it before you pass that. I'm assuming, though, that you're saying that the meetings themselves would not be public, and is that clear?
Absolutely.
Which is
yes.
Which would be critical.
The only thing I can say is if it
becomes a public rulemaking process, it could take longer that way, so I'm not sure what kind of implications that would have, but there would be some time before this would happen. But I'm not an expert on the technical implications of what this would do.
Representative Nabot.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I didn't get your name, sir.
Harley Nelson.
Mr. Nelson, as I understand the Thiessen Amendment, is this removing the sort of emergency rulemaking status of this, so this would slow down the ability to make these rules and create a situation where a year and a half or so extra would go by before we'd be able to do something about sex offenders?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, it could cause some problems as far as at some point in time needing to make some changes with it, that it could cause some problems that could have that effect, yes.
Well, I guess I just wanted to check, Mr. Chairman. My sense is that we have recognized that there are some issues that need to be dealt with, and it seems, as I understand it, that we have sort of an expedited rulemaking process here that Representative Thiessen is trying to exempt this from. Perhaps I'm wrong, Representative Thiessen. Tell me if I'm wrong about that.
That's not my intent. Why don't we talk to Mr. Shepard? What my understanding is what this does is it says you don't have to apply rulemaking at all. They can just adopt rules without any process. I think they could probably, after my amendment, still avail themselves of the expedited rulemaking process, and that's probably the way they would proceed in this case. But maybe I'm wrong.
Mr. Shepard, what are we doing?
Mr. Chair, under the bill as it currently stands, the department and the new board would not have to adopt rules at all. They would be exempt from all rulemaking. If Representative Thiessen's amendment were adopted, they would have to go through the full rulemaking process. There's not any provision in here for expedited rulemaking. So it's sort of an all or nothing the way it's been posed.
Which would bring us to Representative Knobloch's comment that would not expedite a situation where we needed to go.
And that wasn't my intent, but I'm assuming as part of this amendment we could authorize them under the expedite. We could just put this language in that would allow them to use the expedited rulemaking process.
And which one, Mr. Chairman? There are several choices.
You're asking me?
I would say there are several options under expedited, so you have to pick which one. Representative Thiessen, I would urge you to withdraw the amendment, and maybe as this travels along, try to refine that.
This is room.
It comes back here.
Right. So therefore, and we don't want. Then you get another shot, Representative Thompson. Representative Thiessen, is this the way you want to go? We just got to know if you want to offer the amendment, because we'll take the vote and get going here.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Chair, my intent is not to delay this process, and I think we could use some expedited rulemaking procedures to accomplish it in the time we need. But I do have a concern. I mean, we do need to be very careful here, because this is a judicial type of determination, essentially, about whether someone can get out of prison or not. And there's constitutional implications, and there's implications that people have, not just the Department of Corrections, but, you know, victims and a whole variety of others, I think, that would want to have input into how this, the rules that this board is going to apply go forward. And so I think it's important there is some public process involved.
On the amendment, Representative
Stover. Mr. Chairman and Representative Knobloch, at the same time, if we're trying our best to deal with this type of an offender, we don't want to have the board, with not having adopted any rules at all, be inconsistent in their application of justice. And if they start doing that, then you're going to have a constitutional problem, and we'll have a bunch of people that we're trying to keep under lock and key be released on a technicality. So I think it's important to have the board adopt rules, have some public input into that adopting rules. And my understanding of the rulemaking that there's, you could have an expedited rules that go into effect, and then if someone requests a public hearing, those rules are in effect, but then they're subject to change after public hearing.
Okay.
And I'm not that familiar with all the expedited rulemaking, but someone around here should be able to say under this section, they can expedite the rules. I think you want to have rules.
Representative
Knobloch. Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I you know, I guess my concern here is that this is a important issue that we need to act on, and I, you know, there are various ways to do expedited rules. I appreciate what Representative Thiessen is trying to do. I think it's an honorable motive, but I'm not sure that we've looked at all the implications of that, and I'm concerned if we do something here that suddenly moves everything back a year and a half or 2 years, because it takes a long time to put in regular rules. You know, maybe one thing to do, Representative Solberg, this bill will eventually have to go to Ways and Means. It's going to Judiciary. I don't know if Representative Thiessen sits on Judiciary or not, but maybe it's a issue we can look at a little bit later on when we've had a chance to look into it more.
Representative Thiessen, I saw Mr. Shepherd with you. Do you have different language?
Well, yeah, I do have some language, and that's this goes on the Subdivision 10 part. What it would be to delete lines...
Where?
Page 41, I'm sorry.
Page what?
41.
Page 41.
Lines in line 32 and 33, we would delete, are not subject to Minnesota Statutes Chapter 14, including Section 14.386. And instead insert may adopt rules under Section 14.389, which is the expedited rulemaking process, which should, you know, take a matter of month, you know, a few months.
Okay, so that's going to be your new motion for the amendment, correct?
And plus, yeah, the thing I dropped the on the earlier page.
Okay. Representative Zellers, on his changes, what's your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman, I actually would like to defer to one of my other co-authors. Representative Strand has been dying to talk about this.
Mr. Chair, I just lean back to a person from the Department of Corrections. Your point is an excellent one, Representative Thiessen, and I think you're right on point, and you're right, you're going from placement within the DOC system, which is one thing, to term and release of prisoners, which is a very different thing. And the compromise that you just suggested, I think, is an excellent suggestion, and I would urge its adoption.
Okay. Does everybody, Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention one thing. If I recall Representative Zeller's earlier remarks when the question arose about fiscal impact, he said there wouldn't be any appreciable impact for a couple of years because there wouldn't be anyone affected by this.
I think it was Representative Lesch that said that, but that's okay.
Well, in any case, yeah. I believe that was testimony, so it would seem that if that is the case, there would be sufficient time, particularly for an expedited rule process.
Okay. Anybody else wanted to chime in on this amendment? Representative Lippman.
Well, again, I would just direct members to page 37. I mean, the current law, the Commissioner of Corrections is exempt from rulemaking for placement, supervision of inmates serving a supervised release, so they are indeed out. I'm not sure that those are different in nature and degree. I would disagree with my honorable friend, Representative Strand, that it's a different kettle of fish for a conditional release than a supervision of inmates serving a supervised release. I think these are quite similar. Even expedited rulemaking can be burdensome and expensive. I would rather have this process more nimble. With respect, I don't like the Thiessen Amendment.
Okay, Mr. Shepherd needs to repeat it one more time so we all understand it, and he makes sure he gets it right, and then we'll vote it up or vote it down.
Mr. Chair, members, my understanding of Representative Thiessen's amendment is on page 37, delete Article 2, Section 2 from the bill, because he's deleting all the changes in that section. And I hope Representative Thiessen would correct me if that's wrong.
Apparently that's right, yeah.
And then, Mr. Chair, on page 41 of the bill, line 32, delete the word R at the end of the line. Delete page 41, delete line 33. Page 41, line 34, delete 14.386, comma, and insert may adopt rules under section 14.389.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And if I can just make one more comment, to respectfully disagree with Representative Lippman, I do think, I mean, when you have supervised release, that's something that's set up at the time of the sentencing, and that's about where this person's going to go and how they're going to be supervised. It's not about whether someone's going to be let out, period. I think it is a very different animal. So that's all. Thank you.
All right, Representative Zellers, last word. Yes, no, what's your thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, I will defer to my colleague, Representative Lippman.
who has a far wider, deeper knowledge of the law and current statutes than I.
Okay. On the amendment, Thiessen amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is adopted. Okay. On the bill as amendment, I will renew my motion one more time. House File 2308 be recommended to pass as amended to Judiciary, Judiciary, Finance. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. It passes. You're on your way. Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to bring forth for reconsideration House File 769, which we voted on Ash Wednesday, February 25, a bill dealing with making radio operators essential employees.
Okay, that's a non-debatable motion. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I think it... Wait a minute, I haven't ruled yet. I think it passed, but division's been called. All in favor of that motion say... Raise your hand. Okay. I'll get it right this time, Roy.
Did you get me, Rory?
Did you get him? Okay, and against? That prevails on 10 to 9. Normally, I'd tell you we should lay it over to get everybody here, but we have people from AFSCME here. We have people from the patrol here. So at this point, I don't know if unless anybody has any questions, we can just proceed to vote on that bill, which is 2308, correct, Representative? Oh, no, I'm sorry, 769.
Mr. Chair, 769.
Okay.
What's the motion to recommend to pass and go where?
Mr. Chair, recommend to pass and go to the floor.
Recommending to pass, Representative Erickson has a motion to recommend to pass House File Number 769. All in favor, as amended, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I believe it does prevail. Division's been called again. Okay. Raise your hands if you're for Representative Erickson's amendment.
Motion.
I'm sorry. Thank you. And against? The motion does prevail in a vote of 10 to 9.
Chairman,
Representative Solberg.
Can we also send a wooden stake with this
one? let's move right along, folks.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Haas, this is the bill you had before us yesterday.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And now you're going to, we laid it over, we just temporarily laid it over, so the motion is to recommend to pass and it goes to, where does this go?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I'll defer on where it's going to go because we got one amendment to debate, and if that goes on, then it'll probably come to my
turn. All right. Why don't you go ahead and get your amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, first of all, I'd like to have you pull out the A3 amendment. This addresses the concerns that Representative Solberg, Representative Kahn brought up yesterday.
I don't have that.
It should be A3? In your packets.
If you left the stuff from yesterday, it should be here.
Oh. No, Mr. Chair, this is a new amendment, the A3.
Oh, wait a minute. It was just passed out. I'm sorry. A3, we got it?
I don't have it.
I don't, none of us.
No, it's A3. It's a cleanup amendment.
A4.
Or is it A4? Oh.
Does everybody have the A4?
Mr. Shepard changed the number on it. I made the notes on the A3, but we corrected it.
On the A4 amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and this just puts...
Amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and this just puts the bill in order and corrects the insertion of the administration into various parts of the bill, and there was just a couple little technical cleanups on in there.
All right. On the A4 amendment to put the bill in order, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Okay. That one's on.
All right.
Now, we're on the bill as amended.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I believe the amendment does take care of the first part with the Minnesota planning. That was where a lot of the questioning came up, and that in the reorganization order 188 and how that was all redistributed.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see those in here.
Which one? The A?
In the A4, right?
I don't see where it takes
care of. Wait a minute, are you talking about
A4
not seeing
the A4 that I've got?
No, it shouldn't be. It should be the A4.
Well, I I don't have that.
You should have a one-page A4 and a 1024 multi-page one. Okay, you're fine.
Okay. Representative Silver, see the changes we made to insert at administration and that? Okay. All right. The next part of the bill is the energy pricing forward part of the bill. And what this is, members, is to get a better pricing on our gas that we use, natural gas and fuel and things like that for heating. This is a practice that has been used by the Met Council, has just put it into effect. School districts are using it, some of those throughout the state. The University of Minnesota went on this a couple years ago. Remember, I think it was 1996. There was fuel oil prices went through the roof, and it was really cold. And University of Minnesota, in order to save money, actually transported fuel oil from their Minneapolis campus up to their Duluth campus in order to save money. Otherwise, it would almost cost prohibitive for them to buy the fuel oil up there.
It is,
I know. So anyhow, what they've done is to price energy pricing forward. And what it is it's similar to what CenterPoint Energy offers residents on their gas bill, where you can lock in a price for gas and you just pay the same amount. It's similar to buying, and they're going out on the futures market and then buying gas at a certain price so they can pass those savings on to us. So that is what that part of the bill is. And then
this is in the multi-amendment?
No, this is in the bill. We're on the bill. Then we have the Small Business Procurement Council that was reinstated. I believe we had discussion on that with Representative Solberg. And then the last part of the bill then would be an amendment. And that at this time, Mr. Chair, if we could do the 1024 amendment.
1024 amendment. Okay,
this is a multi-page.
That's the gist of that.
And Mr. Chair, what we're going to do on the 1024 amendment is to do an oral amendment to get it technically right. And that would be on page 3, line 20, after grants, remove the colon, or the comma rather, insert and then on line 21, delete or other gifts. I kind of had a problem with gifts in this thing, and so I think we can cover everything that the Commissioner of Administration may apply for and accept grants and contributions from the federal government or and other public or private sources for deposit into the fund.
And you have to get rid of that other comma there.
Yes, I see that. So we'll remove the comma at the end of contributions also.
Everybody understand this amendment? Any questions? If not, all in favor of this amendment, the what you're calling this, the 1024.
This
right?
is 1024.
As changed.
As amended.
Right. Okay. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. No. That's not.
Okay.
Whoop.
Mr. Chair. No. Now on to the amendment. Okay. And I'll let the department.
Mr. Representative Stolberg.
Questions yesterday, whatever day it was.
It was
on the repeal.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can we do we're on the amendment right now,
okay.
And then we'll go back to the repealers.
Okay.
So, I think Mr. Levering, you want to explain the technology fund, what we're doing there?
Welcome again.
This amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You want the technology one?
Yeah. This
I'd like to, if I
might. You've got to tell us who you are.
Bring up Deputy Commissioner Keith Payton to talk about the technology.
Welcome again. You got to tell everybody who you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Payton, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Administration, also the State Chief Information Officer.
And
we would like you to explain the technology enterprise fund.
The Department of Administration is continually looking for ways to leverage and to share services across many agencies and many systems. In that endeavor, in 2003, I believe the TEF fund was abandoned. This was one tool that we used to influence innovation, and also one tool that we used to try to help manage inter-agency systems and initiatives at that time. this fund, we're asking for it to be reinstated as a vehicle for influencing that behavior and managing those issues. Tied to this request is no request for monies at this time.
It's a fund, but there's no request for monies?
Correct.
Okay. I'm just, does that make this then go to your committee then, even if it's a fund?
Mr. Chair, I'd still like to take a look at it, okay, because there is some
we
question.
Haven't said where we want to send it yet, so I assume
right.
You want to see it.
That's what I was thinking. If this goes on, because there's still a question. We have that money still sitting in the technology fund, and we got to take a look at that. So,
okay, now we have the bill in front of us, as you have the two amendments on.
We haven't voted this one in yet.
Okay, which one is this one?
Then? The 1024. Yeah. We did
vote it on.
No, that was just the technical.
No, we voted on both.
Okay, hey, so we're further ahead.
Have questions on the bill as amended, and I don't know if you're ready for them or not.
Okay, we go.
Okay, Representative Solberg, you were first.
Mr. Chairman, we had some questions about the repeaters.
Okay.
I need to be comfortable with those.
Okay.
More than just being a technical thing. Community-based planning, I remember when that was a controversial issue, I understand, but it seems like we're repeating it. Are we putting it in some other place?
Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, according to the information I received, that the functions were transferred to administration, and the duties are still in statutes. So we're just repealing them out of this section of law, but they are still in the admins sections, and I believe...
Chairman, can you point that out to me? Where there being...
I can't. Somebody will. Anybody? Somebody?
Oh, yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Deborah Pyle with the Department of Administration, the Local Planning Assistance
Thanks.
Center.
Welcome to our committee.
The question was with regard to the repealers related to community-based planning elements.
Mr. Chairman, that and correct? Others.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'd like to first address the ones dealing with community-based planning. That particular statute, which was passed back in 97, was then slated to be sunset in 99 by the legislature, sunsetting in July 1 of 2001. What you'll see here is a couple of places that were left in statute that referred to the program and referred to particularly 4A08, which was the 11 goals for community-based planning. So what we have here is several sections that are to be repealed because they really refer to a section of law that no longer exists.
So, Mr. Chairman, the sunset was allowed to take place?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Khan, you had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, as long as we have the Chief Information Officer before us, I wanted to find out if he checked on the things we asked him yesterday about risk assessment of PRINET and the how the administration is pursuing its 16E.03 powers of signing off on computerized projects.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the question, as I understood it last evening, was whether or not there was a risk assessment that had been conducted. And the I was at a disadvantage because of my tenure. But yes, the answer is there was an extensive risk assessment done by an outside firm, and that risk assessment has been documented. Not all of the risks that were assessed in that study were necessarily acted upon, but the risk assessment was done.
And the department accepted it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Anybody in the audience like to speak for or against the bill? If not, Representative Haas.
Renew my motion, Mr. Chair, that I go to State Government Finance.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Do we have any minutes, Mr. Cole?
Okay.
We have, they are here. There's Representative Tease, can we do the minutes first? In fact, you can move the minutes of the March 8th.
And I'll move those minutes.
All right, I'm glad you raised your hand for that. Any corrections or additions? If not, all in favor say aye. 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 Opposed, no. All right, Representative Teeson.
Yeah, I'd like to move to reconsider House File 769.
Representative Teeson moves to reconsider House File 769.
Which one is that, Mr. Chair?
That's the one we just reconsidered. Oh, but it's not debatable, but for explanation purposes, that's the one we just reconsidered and did all over again, right? Okay. House File 769 has been motion to reconsider, and it is not debatable. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
It's back out. It has been reconsidered. Okay. Representative Teeson.
I don't know what the...
I think before us, let's vote.
It's before us, let's vote. This Mr. is
Chairman,
debatable.
Mr. Chairman, just so everyone knows what we're voting on, can you tell us again what House File 769 is?
Do you want me to tell?
Yes.
769. Oh, gosh. Okay. 769 is the bill that we had regarding the radio control operators being made essential employees. The testimony was that it was that they wanted to be essential. Does that help you enough?
I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to have it clear for everyone in the audience and everyone else.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
No.
Sorry. I was what? I apologize. Can we do that again?
You were backwards.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Let's do a division.
We'll do a division. Okay. All in favor of... We already voted to reconsider. Bring it up today. Okay. Now we're in favor of the bill. All in favor, raise your hands. And all against? Seven. Now it has failed again. We'll see everybody tomorrow.
We'll try it again.